welcome to the AWS Morning Brief Extras. I'm your host, Corey Quinn. Multi-cloud, that is to say, running the same workload across multiple cloud providers in a completely agnostic way, is absolutely something you need to be focusing on, well, at least according to two constituencies. First, declining vendors that realize that if you don't go multi-cloud, they'll have nothing left to sell you. AWS isn't going to build you a multi-cloud dashboard, so VMware, the payday lenders of technical debt, absolutely will build and sell you one. And the other constituency of niche players, which is Gartner speak for crappy vendors in this public cloud space, who realize that if you go all in on just one cloud provider, it will absolutely not be them. Now, I'm neither one of those two constituencies, so I'm much more interested in what's right for your company. Now, the single disclaimer I'm going to make here is that I'm talking about best practices, which you should hear as sensible defaults. If you have a considered reason why something I say doesn't apply to your situation, you're probably right. A customer demands it is one such reason, and people will die if this service goes down is another. In other words, I'm calling multi-cloud a worst practice to be avoided by default. Let's talk about multi-cloud isn't. Every company is a multi-cloud company if you squint at it hard enough. Here at the DocBill Group, we use G Suite for collaboration, AWS for our infrastructure, Jithub or GitHub for our code repositories, and IBM Model M buckling spring keyboards to express passive aggression toward our family members during these unprecedented times. This is not what I'm talking about. That's just good business sense. If someone suggests that you go all in on AWS and implies that this means using Amazon Chime, WorkDocs, and CodeCommit, that person is actively attempting to sabotage you, and you should stop listening to this and call corporate security immediately. So what is multi-cloud? What I'm referring to instead is the idea of building workloads that can seamlessly run across any cloud provider or your own data centers with equal ease. Note that data centers and a public cloud provider paired together is known as hybrid, which is a whole rant for a different time. I agree with the vision. It's compelling and it's something I would very much enjoy having. However, it's about as practical as saying just write bug-free code to your developers, or actually trying to find the spherical cow your physics model dictate should exist. It's a lot harder than it looks. Yes, every cloud provider can run containers that you hurl their way. This is the promise that Kubernetes, which is an open source project out of Google that's named after the Greek god of spending money on cloud services, has been offering for a long time. The trouble is that you're catering to the lowest common denominator. A cloud provider is only a pile of disks, some network, and a bunch of servers to run containers on if you view cloud by the very broadest definition. In other words, what IBM seems to think it means. Those basic primitives exist everywhere. AWS, Azure, GCP, Oracle Cloud, IBM quote-unquote cloud, and your own terrifying data center. If you treat all of those environments as being fundamentally the same thing, that means that every additional service that's any higher order than those baseline primitive offerings automatically becomes closed to you. Load balancers work differently on every cloud platform, so being multi-cloud means you're forced into running your own with Nginx or HAProxy. That same story applies to databases, monitoring systems, security permissions models, anything that's event-driven, a service mesh, an object store, and oh my God, you haven't even thought about your compliance story yet, have you? Yes, I know what you're about to say. The industry as a collective whole has been doing this for a very long time. We haven't magically forgotten how to run all of these components ourselves. But my point is that while you're spending time configuring HAProxy to route requests to the proper containers when the right conditions are met, one of your competitors has configured an application load balancer to do this entire thing with three lines of YAML and is now moving forward on building the thing that actually matters to their business goals. Spoiler, it's not a load balancer. We'll ignore entirely the fact that the managed version of a load balancer has way better availability, durability, reliability, and resiliency than anything you're going to cobble together yourself. You're not leveraging the best of both worlds here. You're improving your data center at the expense of your cloud environment when you start down that path. Well, what about lock-in? Another common rationale for multi-cloud is to avoid lock-in to a single vendor. I have some bad news for you. You are already locked in. You're locked in either to technology selections, most notably databases in almost every case, or to soft lock-in via things that don't port over super well. For example, whatever your cloud provider's identity and access management story is, it's almost certainly not congruent with that of other cloud providers. But more pernicious than that is something I'll call buy-in. Buy-in is the only real killer out of that list, and coincidentally, it's the one that no one outside of engineering really seems to think about. In other words, what happens when you announce a global migration from AWS to Oracle Cloud? Well, to start, at least a third of your engineering staff is going to quit to go work down the road with their existing skill sets on a platform that other companies are using more deeply. It's hard to learn a new cloud provider's ins, outs, and most importantly, how they're going to fail. It's far easier to get ever deeper into the existing ecosystem that you're already familiar with. It's also way more valuable from the employee's perspective. Companies don't want to hire generalists who are broad across multiple cloud providers. They bias for specialists who are good on one particular platform. This might not be intuitively true if you look at job postings, but it becomes much more understandable if you filter for the jobs that pay eye-wateringly high salaries. In what you might be forgiven for mistaking for a blast from the past, today I want to talk about New Relic. They seem to be a relatively legacy monitoring company, and I would have agreed with that assessment up until relatively recently. But they did something a little out there. They reworked everything. They went open source, they made it so you can monitor your whole stack in one place, and most notably from my perspective, they simplified their pricing into something that is much more affordable for almost everyone. There's even a free tier with one user and 100 gigs per month, totally free. Check it out at newrelic.com. As a direct result of this, virtually all of the growth that the cloud providers demonstrate in their quarterly earnings isn't coming from convincing other cloud providers' customers to switch to them. It's a combination of people migrating in from data centers, as well as net new workloads. It's hard enough to migrate from a data center to a cloud provider when you, well, at least in theory, already know all the knobs and dials for your data center environment. Going from cloud to cloud is at least 10 times more complicated. And neither companies nor employees are particularly gung-ho about signing up for that particular brand of pain. Ah, some people might say, but what about negotiating leverage? If I have two cloud providers, I can use one to beat the other into offering better discount terms. That is a swing and a miss in most circumstances, I'm afraid to tell you. This isn't vendor management from the bad old days of dealing with big telco. Every cloud provider of substance, as well as Google Cloud, negotiate discounting percentages based upon percentage of spend. Cutting your spend in half reduces your negotiating base. But let's pretend for a second that you're a company with incredibly portable workloads, and yes, they do exist, that can in fact transition workloads to other providers seamlessly. Every time we have seen this happen with our clients, the discounting that they achieve by threatening or actually doing that is less than the discount that they would have gotten by simply committing to higher spend levels. Remember, when I help fix the horrifying AWS bill here at the Duckbill Group, we see and we help negotiate an awful lot of large-scale cloud contracts. We have seen a lot of nonsense. This is how it works. Let me be very clear here. $9 million a year on one provider versus $3 million a year each on three providers is going to yield remarkably different costs even before you factor in the expensive management and engineering overhead of making those three different providers play well together. And now you're negotiating discounts on the basis of $3 million a year and doing it three times. Talk about cutting off your nose to spite your face. No one comes out ahead in those. And further, regardless of what provider you pick, once a cloud vendor runs your production infrastructure, they cease being your vendor and instead become your partner, whether you want them to be or not. Adversarial relationships aren't nearly as productive as collaborative ones. I'm not suggesting you leave money on the table, but be smart about what you're asking for. Ah, but what happens if our provider raises prices? In practice, the unspoken rule of the cloud is that things get less expensive over time. We've seen that borne out by every price change from every provider, with the singular exception of Google Cloud, which has completely shafted its customers twice. The first time was in their 14x increase for Google Maps API access. The second was when they began charging for previously free GKE cluster management. I expect that between the time I record this and the time it publishes, they're going to do it a third time, so I'm once again out of date. My answer to that is that we can safely declare GCP a special case from which you really want to have a rapid exodus plan should you need one. Now, one of the more compelling arguments in my favor is that multi-cloud doesn't exist in reality. In practice, every we're multi-cloud story I've ever seen in the wild means that we're over 80% of our workloads on one provider, and then we have a smattering of workloads on other providers. Any choice you make is going to constrain your options. Multi-cloud is the embodiment of the ideal. Indecision is the key to flexibility. The problem is that you're going to spend so much time avoiding making a commitment to one provider that you'll spend an ever-increasing amount of engineering toil keeping your environment functional at a relatively basic level that you're going to struggle to really innovate as a business. As Ben Kehoe so eloquently puts it, multi-cloud is like cow tipping. We know cow tipping doesn't exist because there are no videos of it on YouTube. In this case, there are no articles or conference talks about companies talking about their successful multi-cloud strategies paying off. To really drive that point home, consider this. VMware's entire business is predicated on this bet paying off. And yet, VMworld 2019's keynote featured a fictional company called Tanzu Tees making hilariously awful technology choices to use a whole bunch of different cloud providers interchangeably. And they did that rather than using an actual customer because real companies just don't make IT decisions this poorly. Well, it might be more accurate to say that they don't make decisions that are this bad and then admit to them on stage. If vendors that are themselves highly incentivized to demonstrate multi-cloud success stories can't get anyone to get on stage and talk about it being a success, what does that tell you about the multi-cloud model's viability? If you're anything like me, you're going to listen to this, believe you're a special case to which none of the above constraints or caveats apply, and try to do multi-cloud anyway. You do you. You know your business far better than I do. I just have one suggestion. Before you go whole hog into a second cloud provider, first, spin up an active-active environment across two regions in your current provider. With complete service and API compatibility between those two regions, it should, by your theory, be a piece of cake. Come back and talk to me after you've done that, and then we'll see how simple and straightforward this really is. Multi-cloud is the wrong answer. It's going to take more than an imaginary company's success story to convince me otherwise. Thank you for listening to the AWS Morning Brief Extras. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Whereas if you've hated this podcast, please leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and tell me exactly what my problem is.
This has been a Humble Pod production.
Stay humble.